Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're going to continue our study of the seventh canto, currently leading all the way up to the 12th canto in this Bhaktivedanta course, covering all the second six chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we have looked at chapters 1 to 5 of the 7th canto. So, let's just have a look at this summary here by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur of, as he in the 7th canto, chapter 1, verse 1, he just describes a little bit about the 7th canto in general. He says, offering respects to Guru and Krishna, the ocean of mercy, I take shelter of Sri Sukadev, the eye of the universe and master of the worlds. I offer myself and everything I possess to Krishna, the life of the gopis and the controller, in service to his dear devotees. He continues to say, two types of uti, inclination, are described in the 7th canto. Inauspicious, arising from anger of the demons, and auspicious, arising from the mercy of the devotees. So this canto also glorifies devotees of three types: Shuddha Bhaktas, persons having bhakti mixed with a little jnana or karma, Kama Misra Bhaktas and Jnana Misra Bhaktas, and persons having jnana mixed with a little bhakti. The inclinations of Hiranyakashipu were inauspicious, were inborn. The cause was the ancient anger of the Kumaras. The inclination for pure bhakti of Prahlad, his son, which was very auspicious, arose from accepting murders from Narada's feet. That bhakti which appears within the devotees gave rise to the Lord's mercy upon him and protected him from the king. That creeper of bhakti, growing in a field composed of humility, respect and other qualities, is nourished by the devotee by watering it through hearing and chanting. The topic of 10 chapters is pure bhakti. 5 chapters show how bhakti attains through a guru of similar bhakti is a minor element of karma or jnana, or a major element with a mixture of karma or jnana, in order to attain one's respective goals. These processes gradually become the states of prema, pure bhakti, shanta bhakti from mixed bhakti, and liberation, jnana with a little bhakti. These are the topics of the chapters of the 7th canto. In the first chapter, Sukadev dispels doubt about partiality in Vishnu and briefly relates the story of the three births of Jaya and Vijaya. In the previous canto, it was said that Diti, whose two sons had been killed by Vishnu after he was instigated by Indra, burned with anger, inflamed by lamentation. Parikshit, as if not tolerating partiality of Vishnu in favouring Indra, but actually understanding the truth, to desired to relish the nectar of the conclusion from the mouth of Sukadeva. Therefore, he asked this question in three verses. If the Lord is equal, how can he show partiality? If he is affectionate to all beings, why is the Lord not affectionate to the demons? If he is the friend of all beings, why is he not friendly to the demons? So that's a very nice summary there. So it gives us an overall view of what we're studying in the seventh canto, which is very good. So I'll just briefly summarise those again. Inclination, uti. Auspicious, arising from the anger of the demons, and inauspicious, arising from the anger of the demons, and auspicious, arising from the mercy of the devotees. Two inclinations we may have. This canto also glorifies devotees of three types. Suta-bhaktas, so pure devotees, of course, are untinged by karma and jnana. Then there's persons having bhakti mixed with a little jnana or karma, so they're bhaktas. But then there's persons who are basically jnanis, sometimes karmis with a little bhakti. They're basically like that. So three types. They're all classified as devotees to some degree. Pure devotees, devotees with some tinge of jnana or karma, and then basically jnanis has a little tinge of bhakti, not much. And so we hear that the bhakti of Prahlad, so we're just looking at the commentary on the first verse of the seventh canto by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti the Kuru. It gives a good understanding of the overall picture of the seventh canto. We see that the bhakti such as appeared in Prahlad Maharaj protected him, and that kripa of bhakti, it was growing the heart of Prahlad was a very favourable, fertile field because of the qualities of humility and respect. But then it was really nicely nourished by the hearing and the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, etc. So in the first 10 chapters, the topic is pure bhakti. Five chapters show how bhakti attained through a guru of similar bhakti appears in the different types of devotees. And, the bhakti from a pure bhakti develops into prema. The bhakti from mixed bhaktis can develop into santa bhakti, santa ras, and the little bit of bhakti that's there within the jnanis can manifest in liberation. Bear that in mind, because there are verses in this sixth chapter which we can refer back to this a little bit. Okay, so that's an overall view of the seventh canto. So we try and relate everything to those themes. Now, in those first five chapters, we saw how Prahlad was being raised by his father, Hiranyakashipu, and the various teachers trying to teach him the ways of the demons, the materialistic ways of the demons. But somehow or another, Prahlad, because there was bhakti in his heart, he rejected all of these teachings. And when it was asked what he had learned, he described that he had learned about pure devotional service, which one practices Bhagavad Dham, to surrender to the personality of Godhead and attain a goal, a transcendental goal, which is worth realizing. So that's where we're up to. Now, in chapter 6, this is what happens next. And I'll just read the summary. So, first of all, maybe we'll even just write those things on the board, since they're so crucial to everything. Let's see if we can. Can you just pause that for a moment? So, now, chapter 6, Prahlad instructs his demoniac schoolmates. This chapter describes Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his school friends. In speaking to his friends, who are all sons of demons, Prahlad Maharaj stressed that every living entity, especially in human society, must be interested in spiritual realization from the very beginning of life. When human beings are children, they should be taught that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the worshipable deity for everyone. One should not be very much interested in material enjoyment. Instead, one should be satisfied with whatever material profits are easily obtainable. And, because the duration of one's life is very short, one should utilize every moment for spiritual advancement. One may wrongly think, in the beginning of our lives, let us enjoy material facilities, and in old age we may become Krishna conscious. Such materialistic thoughts are always useless, because in old age we cannot be trained in the spiritual way of life. Therefore, from the very beginning of life, one should engage in devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. This is the duty of all living entities. Material education is infected by the three modes of nature, but spiritual education, for which there is a great need in human society, is transcendental. Prahlad Maharaj disclosed the secret of how he had received instructions from Narada Muni. By accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the Parampara succession, one will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications. After Prahlad Maharaj's class friends had listened to Prahlad Maharaj, they inquired how he had become so learned and advanced. In this way, the chapter ends. So, that summary there point for point practically sums up in a nutshell each point of each sloka of this Bhagavatam. So, you know, if you studied this chapter and then you were to give a class on it and you just looked at this summary, you'd remember the whole chapter. Therefore, it's very good to learn these summaries. Now, so I'm assuming that when we come to class, everyone has at least once gone through the chapter, yeah? So that means we're not going to read all the purports, but I'll paraphrase the main points of them, bring up a few, but if there are some points that you, in your readings, you want to, you know, discuss a little bit more, ask questions, then do that. Otherwise, from this point, we're going to move through a lot quicker. And to do that, I'm assuming that everyone will have read the chapters before we get to class. And therefore, some things are very easily digested, remembered, studied at home by everyone. Other things definitely need a lot of attention to class, and we want to spend more of our time in class going over the things which need more attention. So we're going to move through a lot quicker from this point. So in verse number one, Prahlad Maharaj said, "One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved. And although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life, one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection." So, Prahlad Maharaj is making this statement that from the very beginning we should learn devotional service. Srila Prabhupada in his purport puts things into perspective. So he says the whole purpose of Vedic civilization and the reading of the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service in the human form of life. So that really puts it in perspective. So therefore, when we hear from Srila Prabhupada, we understand, oh, what Prahlad is saying is he's giving the purpose of the whole Vedic civilization. He's giving the purpose of all the Vedas. And that. Otherwise, you know, someone may read this and think, oh, well, Prahlad says this and this one says that, like that. But Srila Prabhupada, you know, just in case you missed that point, it becomes apparent as we go through that, but one may not pick it up as soon as Prahlad begins speaking. So it really gives it a lot of weight, a lot of importance to Prahlad, who appears to be a young child, you know, who favours one thing, devotional service. Some may think, oh, because he's a child, it's easy, or what have you. Prabhupada, just in case you think anything like that, it is the purpose of the entire Vedic civilization. And therefore, he goes into describing, you know, the various ashrams, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, to verify that, you know, these are the basic ashrams of Vedic civilization and they're meant for this devotional service. So he's giving practical evidence of how the Vedic civilization is based around God consciousness. Now, then Srila Prabhupada picks up on the very important point, as Krishna does himself in the Bhagavad Gita, the 240, Svapamam Yashadam Asha Trayate Mahato Bayet. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So, many children who take birth in this world, if they survive, especially in Kali Yuga, if they're not killed by their own mothers, or then killed by their fathers in a war, or their brothers, you know, for their inheritance, or by some crazy people just through madness. If they survive, then they're taught, educated in sense gratification by which they may attain the bodies of animals because of living a life of sense gratification. Which is very sad because the human form of life is very rare. So that is a very fearful destination. But Srila Prabhupada points out that by devotional service, one can avoid all of the fearful conditions that one may fall upon a child who's born in this world, a human child. You know, one can avoid all those fearful conditions, so many terrible conditions, by just a little bit of devotional service. And that devotional service is very, very easily done. And especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it even more easy in the age of Kali, just saying that one need only chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So Prahlad's pointing out that Acharet Pragyo, you know, one who's sufficiently intelligent, they'll understand. There's many, many terrible conditions. Extremely, conditions of what we might consider extreme torture. Extreme torment, extreme pain, anxiety, fearfulness for long, long periods of life, many, many births. And all of that, an intelligent person can avoid all of that in a very easy way. And the whole purpose of Vedic civilization is to help people avoid all those fearful material situations by teaching them to worship the personality of Godhead in devotional service. So he goes on to say in the next verse, the human form of life affords one the chance to return home back to Godhead. Therefore, every living entity, especially in the human form of life, must engage in devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This devotional service is natural because Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most beloved, the master of the soul, and the well-wisher of all other living beings. So, devotional service, Prahlad Maharaj is saying one should engage in devotional service, and that devotional service is offered to the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So Srila Prabhupada summarizes Prahlad's statements about Vishnu, again from the Bhagavad Gita, 5:29, that the sages knowing me is the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities. In other words, the supreme enjoyer. The supreme lord of all planets and demigods, so it's the supreme proprietor or controller, and the well-wisher of all living entities attain peace from the pangs of material existence, the supreme friend. So simply by understanding these three facts, that the Supreme Lord Vishnu is the proprietor of the entire creation, and that he is the best wishing, well-wishing friend of all living entities, and he is the supreme enjoyer of everything, one becomes peaceful and happy. So, looking for this happiness, you know, living entities, they're wandering throughout the universe in so many different forms, but they won't find it until they take up that devotional service to Vishnu. In fact, they suffer instead. And so Prahlad Maharaj is suggesting that education should be geared towards this from the very beginning. That would be helpful. Otherwise, it's a waste of life. Educational system in the human form of life should be so perfect that one will understand his intimate relationship with God or Vishnu. Every living entity has an intimate relationship with God. One should therefore glorify the Lord in the adoration of Santaras. And as we said, those perhaps jnanis, etc., with a little tinge of bhakti, they may be attracted towards that Santaras or that.
Kumara, they were glorifying the Lord by the Santa.
Yeah, the Kumaras are a different category, because they began as impersonalists. But then they've got their own parampara as bhaktas. So we might talk about them in the beginning stages or initially being impersonalists, even attracted to the Santa Rasa. But then we can talk about them at later stages also, engaged in spreading the glories, in preaching Krishna consciousness, active service. There's adoration, but then, the preaching is active service. So there's a beginning phase, and then a more perfected stage. So they can glorify the Lord in adoration. And of course, their glorifying the Lord in adoration can be an aspect of, chanting the praises of the Lord, not so much for preaching, but literally out of their appreciation of the Lord himself. They may not necessarily have taken up the service of the Lord and be preaching as an act of service to the Lord, but preaching as a, he's wonderful, like that. Whereas, the bhakta thinks, if others knew he was wonderful, they could become liberated, and the Lord wants me to help them, I will go and do that. So then it's a different aspect of active service. All the might revive the return relationship with Vishnu as a servant in Dasharas, a friend in Sakya Ras, a parent in Vatsalya Ras, or a conjugal lover in Madhuri Ras. All these relationships on the platform of love. So, we see here in the purport, there's Priya, dear one, Atma Ishvara, the master of the soul, Sruhit, the friend. Another meaning of Atma can be the sun, where the Vatsalya comes into it. So these different, the acharyas have analysed that you can see that the five different rasas are being presented there. All these relationships are on the platform of love. Vishnu is the centre of love for everyone, and therefore the duty of everyone is to engage in the loving service of the Lord. As stated by the personality of Godhead in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.38, in any form of life, we are related with Vishnu, who is the most beloved, the super soul, son, friend, and guru. Our eternal relationship with God can be revived in the human form of life, and that should be the goal of education. Indeed, that is the perfection of life and the perfection of education. So Prahlad Maharaj there is just saying that he's already stated that we can avoid the fearful conditions of material life by engaging in devotional service. That's very natural, because he's the most beloved. Whichever type of love we have, originally within our heart, naturally, we can repose that in the Lord, that loving relationship is, it is eternally there already. So it's very natural. No one is being asked to do something new or different from their nature, it's just what is eternally there and what is one's eternal nature, and what is the eternal nature between us and the Supreme Lord. Go, just do that. It's natural. It's already there. So education should just help us to understand that intimate relationship with God, which is already there. We've just forgotten it, so a little bit, it's covered. So, addressing his schoolmates, they're being taught something else. So they may be questioning, Prahlad, what are you saying? how can we relate to this, to what, we're being taught? So Prahlad is going to explain that, my dear friends, born into demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life. Pigs, flies, wombats, galahs, kangaroos, according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavour, just as we obtain distress. So very, Prabhupada preached a lot more from the seventh canto practically than any other. There's so many important verses here. This is one of them. No one tries to seek out distress, and yet it comes of its own accord. So why should they not, understand that even without endeavour, your happiness will come. It's part of having a body, happiness and distress will come. Why waste your time when it's, you're putting in endeavour and it's already going to come. What's going to come is going to come. So don't waste your time there. So then if you're not going to waste your time, why not put it into devotional service? He goes on to say, endeavours merely for sense gratification or material happiness, which is what the materialists and demons teach, material happiness through economic development are not to be performed, for they result only in loss of time and energy, with no actual profit. If one's endeavours are directed toward Krishna consciousness, one can surely attain the spiritual platform of self-realisation. There is no such benefit from engaging oneself in economic development. Even if you get some economic development, you're not going to avoid those great fearful problems and tragedies that we're going to go through life after life. Even if you get the economic development, it's not going to solve those problems. Spiritual education will, but that won't.
Just on this point, here it says they are automatically obtained without endeavor. But we also hear that unless we endeavor, we can't get what is destined to come as well. So what is the actual meaning?
Yeah. So the meaning is that we have let's take longevity. Let's take longevity. So people put a lot of endeavor becoming fit, healthy, certain diets, exercise, jogging, swimming, running, boxing, chasing bulls. So, but there's a destined longevity that's given. So, you know, it's considered that we're given a certain amount of breaths. That's your destiny. When they're all used up, you know, it's gone. And they're just like you wind up a clock, something, the old-fashioned clocks, you wind them up. You go click, 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 click. There's a certain amount of clicks and then it just stops. So when you used up all your, you know, time's finished. Sometimes little kids grab the dial and twist it the wrong way. They force it. So instead of 2 hours and the clocks needs to be wound up again, 10 seconds, it's all used up. Okay. So, you know, there's a fixed amount of clicks, but you can go through it really quick. So now let's take wealth. You're destined a certain amount of wealth. And therefore you can imagine if you use it very carefully, it can last, what you're given in life can last you throughout the course of your life, and you pretty much get all the requirements. If you use it up really quickly, you may think, okay, I will get a huge amount of wealth really quick. And then once you've got that huge amount of wealth really quick, then you spend it really quick. But once your destined amount has been spent, then your poverty's stricken again. So, you know, the endeavour is there, but you're still not going to override your destiny. So if you don't endeavour, now then, apart from that, you know, as you can see that there is a little flexibility in that, as Prabhupada would say, and this really sums it up, you make the best use of a bad bargain. Okay, the deal's done. Bad bargain means the deal's done. You're not getting your money back. You've purchased something and you found out it's a dud. So you're stuck with it. So what are you going to do? Oh God, you know, well, you've got no more money. You can't get another one. You've done your money. Done your dash. Okay. So you've got to get the best use out of this one that's got a few defects in it. So now that sums up, you've got to put your endeavour in to get the best use out of it. That's your endeavour. I've got to use my intelligence, you know, and my free will to get some value out of this thing which has some defects. That's your endeavour. If your endeavour is faulty, then you may immediately get the worst value. So let's take the example of a, you know, say you buy a car. You bought a car and they said it was 10 years old. Then you found out that they'd put the speedometer thing back and it said it had 20,000 kilometres, but it actually has done 580,000 kilometres. And you think, this is a really old, worn car. Like that. Right? Now, with a really, I don't know if you've ever driven a really old, worn out car. I've driven a few. But the secret is that you got to treat them like an old person. You know, for old people, there's a lot of value there. You can't push them around, you know. So you've got to walk them slowly. You've got to, you know, be patient with them. You've got to look after them a little bit more. But if you do, there's a lot of value you can get from those elderly people, the contribution they can make to your life. If you treat them like a 15-year-old and push them around and expect them to do all sorts of things that are beyond them, they'll be dead at the end of the week. So what you know? So you've got to get the best use. So that's our endeavour. So we have to endeavour. It's not that, you know, it's just going to, that we have no part in it. Five factors for any endeavour mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. You know, there's the super soul himself, who's controlling. You know, there's the type of work that you're doing. It's important. You know, there's the soul, there's the body, and then, you know, the particular senses that you may be using for that. Are you using your eye, your leg, or what have you? You know, as Prabhupada says, you can only eat through the mouth. You know, in person, say it's all one. But, you know, when you want to eat, you eat through the mouth. Don't try to put the food in your ear like this, you know. So you've got the body, but still you've got to use the right senses. And that's your endeavour and your intelligence. You know, our endeavour, how are we going to use the different senses, you know, of the body? How are we going to conserve the energy of the body? To make it last, you know, as Prabhupada describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, that, you know, in India, you know, when they get the rains, they build up the little sort of lumps of dirt, so, you know, furrows and what have you, so that the water is trapped in and then the rice will continue to go. So when it stops raining and the water dries up, they've trapped a lot of the rain. They've conserved it. That, you know, rather than let it, you know, it just comes, oh, let it all wash out to the sea and that. And then, you know, when it's not raining, oh, our rice still needs water, but there's no more coming from the sky. So they've conserved it while it's coming. So similarly, you know, what Prahlad is saying, in youth, conserve your energy, you know, by brahmacharya, practicing brahmacharya. Because later in life, you won't have that sufficient amount of energy, but actually you can conserve it a bit and you'll still have plenty of energy through that brahmacharya practice later in life, like that. So he's recommending. So that's your endeavour. So all of these things are our endeavour. You know, the things that we're doing ourselves with the senses, with the energy, with the vital force, with our intelligence, and dealing with, you know, the situation that confronts us in this world and trying to make the best use of a bad bargain. And within that, so even though our endeavour is there, we still have to understand that because the super soul is there as well and he is controlling our destiny according to our karma and our previous, you know, pious and impious activities, that we're, you know, despite our best endeavour, we're not going to override the fact that the super soul is, you know, one of the controlling factors of the outcomes of our endeavour. But then, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, in the fifth chapter, says, five fifteen, he says, Narate Kasachipapam the Cheva Sukitam Babu Agyanin avritam gyanam tena vuyanti jantavaha. Nor does the Supreme Spirit assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So don't think that what's the use of our endeavor? It's all destined by God. He's doing everything. He's saying, I'm not, don't blame me. I'm not doing everything. You know, it's not that one-sided thing that I'm just doing everything, therefore blame me. Yeah, I'm making you commit sin. I'm making you do this. I'm making you do that. He says, your endeavor is there. Your endeavor is there, and you're endeavoring in certain ways according to, you know, whether you're in, you know, this uti, your inclination is towards bhakti, towards favor, towards the Lord, or it's against the Lord. You know, so you've, you know, if you're not, if your knowledge is covered over by ignorance, then your inclination will be, you know, even towards demoniac, undevotional. Don't just say that everything is happening, that I'm doing everything. It's your endeavor, and your endeavor and your activities are a result of the foolishness by which you, you know, that guide, you know, because as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, activity is, you know, inspired or motivated by knowledge. So, so therefore the super soul is there, our endeavour is there, and our endeavour is motivated according to our inclination. So, and this is the difficulty, as you can see, therefore an action that we perform, we understand from Bhagavad Gita, there are five factors, and then there's the knowledge that motivates that action, and that knowledge is either of tama, rajas, sattva, or bhakti, or a mixture of bhakti and those. We understand that. Even those of other religious traditions have, they don't know those factors. They're not spelled out in the Bible, you know, scientifically, or the Quran. You won't get this level of scientific knowledge, which, you know, you can get a list of five things. You won't get that. What do they have? There's the devil and God and us. Satan. Prabhupada mentioned Satan in this fifth chapter also. That, He mentioned that in the, he mentioned Satan also in that fifth chapter, but from those verses. So then they have a problem. They can't work it out. Did the devil make him do it? Or some people use that. I don't know why I did that. You know, I killed that little baby, I killed my own little baby, beat him to death. The devil must have made me do it. You know? And, you know, so they can't, it's a very, you know, all of the factors are there, and they all have to be accommodated with the understanding of how a person performs an activity in this world. The super soul must be accommodated, that if someone does something, you must accommodate that the super soul is present within that endeavor as the final sanctioner. Without his sanction, nothing will happen, not a blade of grass will happen. Yet, is he going to sanction everything and everything? And what is our say in it? Our say, we have, you know, according to, you know, our level of motivation and inclination, we may perform certain activities. The Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, may not wish us to perform those activities. In fact, throughout the scriptures and within the heart, it's constant. We have a conscience, we have saintly persons, we have scriptures telling us, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. And then we do it. We say, oh, God made me do it. And all the scriptures, God's saying, don't do that, don't do it, please, don't do it. And then we do it. We go, God must have made me do it. You know, I don't believe in the devil. It must have been God. So, you know, it's a very difficult thing for people to understand. And we're very fortunate. You know, people want to know that. Christianity is not supplying the answers to these questions. In fact, Billy Graham, who just passed away, he was Billy Graham, I think his name is, one of the great preachers of Christianity. I think he was 99. He said the one time in his life that his faith was actually tested was when the 9/11, when, you know, thousands of people, he said, he himself at that stage, I can't understand what is happening. You know, is this God's? Is this God's will? Is this the devil? He actually couldn't, it tested, he just sort of had no explanation. And actually I've seen many times, you know, different tragedies, you know, earthquakes and landslides and tsunamis and wars, and they asked the main preacher, you know, can you say something? Mm. And they say, in most cases, they say, I can't understand. Mm. See, the people, this knowledge here presented, you know, in this Bhagavad Gita, if you understand it, it answers every question. But we have to take into account. So, you know, and this is one of the factors. This is a factor. Prahlad's saying this is a factor. Don't waste your time in certain things which come of their own accord. So that is a factor. That's part of the equation. There are the certain things will come of its own accord. Don't waste your time. What are those certain things? You'll get happiness and distress to this body according to our past, you know, reactions, as ordained, as controlled and, sanctioned and arranged by the personality of Godhead himself. Then your question, should we not endeavour at all? No, but you should endeavour, and your endeavour is to make the best use of a bad bargain, but that's not the main goal of your life. And that's not where all your energy should go. Prahlad's saying, put that aside. You know, most of that's going to come and go of its own accord. You put your endeavour into it. You have some say in it. But don't think your whole life should be utilised for that. He's saying, you spend your whole life for devotional service. And the other part is on such a scale that, you know, one, you don't have to put that level of endeavour into it. And two, he's saying that if you actually endeavour in the path of devotional service, it actually counteracts your past karma anyway. So for those who are not doing devotional service, they're not going to counteract their past karma. And they're wasting their time and energy because a lot of it's going to come in. You know, there's some adjustments they'll make. If they take the devotional service, one, they're going to have the good intelligence and the control of the mind and senses to make the best use of a bad bargain. You cannot make the best use of a bad bargain if you have no control of your mind and senses. And you cannot control your mind and senses if there's no God consciousness. So they're not going to make the best use of a bad bargain because their senses and mind are out of control. So again, you need the God consciousness. And if you take the God consciousness, then you can control your mind and senses, make the best use of a bad bargain, put what energy you have to do into those so-called material affairs, but by the devotional service, actually your karma is being burned up, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of lives anyway. And what you can't get by wasting your life in material endeavours, you can get by the bhakti, and you can go back to Godhead. So, these are the factors.
So out of these five factors, are there some actions the super soul never approves and no one can do them?
Yeah, if the super soul, he sanctions something or he doesn't. If he doesn't sanction something, it won't happen. If he sanctions something, it will happen. He may sanction something, but he may not approve of it. Or he may sanction something and think, you're doing something, you could do better, but obviously at this stage you're not going to, so at least this is something. So, you know, there's the super soul is literally... dealing with us one-on-one, each and every living entity, taking into account all of our past activities, good and bad, and our current activities and our current motivations, and dealing with this on a, you know, one-to-one basis, you know, like that. But as we said, as Prabhupada says, make the best use of a bad bargain. You know, bad bargain means that, as Prabhupada says, you know, once you get into this body, don't expect the super soul is going to adjust it. And that's why in the Bhagavad Gita it says the soul is immovable. You know, once the super soul puts you in that body, then, you know, it's immovable. If the super soul puts you in that, no one can get you out. It's immovable. You know, it's not like a brick, you pick it up and put it somewhere else. You know, in this world, scientists, you know, they're very proud of being able to just about move mountains or anything they want, you know, stars, asteroids, you know, planets. But the soul can't move. So, you know, you're locked in. So, therefore, the super soul, you know, not going to sanction. Oh, someone comes along. Oh, the super soul put him in this body, little baby in the middle of a war. No, that's not on. Let's see if we can adjust that. You know. So, the super soul sanctions some things and not others. He has the ultimate control. Yeah.
Also, are there some actions that super soul will always sanction? Like a devotee enduring to go back home, back to Godhead, super soul will always sanction that activity.
Yeah.
So if the devotee does not make it, the only factor is he did not endure enough. Because
it's sanctioned. A little bit more time is needed, that's all. A little bit more purification is needed. It's sanctioned, but it's an ongoing project. So, you know, the project got a green light, it just hasn't come to its fruition. So, I just like, that there's that devotee, was it Mukunda? He committed some offence, maybe preaching personalism or something, and the Lord said he wouldn't see him. The Lord said, you know, what's that? Is it Mukunda?
Associating with Maya.
Yeah. Mukunda. You know, you tell him I will not see him for a million lifetimes, something like that.
10,000
lifetimes. He started jumping up in joy, in ecstasy. 10,000 lives, he has agreed to see me. So you got the green light. 10,000 lifetimes, what is that? Yes. Very happy. And of course, seeing, you know, that ecstatic mood, then he blessed him immediately. So he goes on with this point. So, you know, as you're seeing, these points are very, you know, people oppose them straight off. One, they can't understand them, and they put up ridiculous, so if you, so you're not going to endeavour. You know, they have very weak arguments, but they will oppose them because they just don't sound right to them. And that's because they don't understand the factors. And our job, is to, one, first understand the strong arguments and all the factors involved in it, and then be able to present that, very convincingly, as Prabhupada did. Endeavours merely for sense gratification or material happiness through economic development are not to be performed, for they result only in loss of time and energy with no actual profit. If one's endeavours are directed towards Krishna consciousness, one can surely attain the spiritual platform of self-realisation. There is no such benefit from engaging oneself in economic development. Text number 5. Therefore, while a material existence, bhavam ashrita, a person fully competent to distinguish wrong from right must endeavour to achieve the highest goal of life. As long as the body is stout and strong and is not embarrassed by dwindling. So Prabhupada, he says, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj in the beginning of the chapter, Komara Acharet Pragya, Pragya, refers to one who is experienced and who can distinguish right from wrong. In it comes along in the second chapter too, I think, Bhagavad Gita, the word pragya. Pragya, but... So, such a person should not waste his energy and valuable human life simply working like a cat or a dog to develop his economic condition. So Prahlad's given us some factors to consider. Take up this devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Don't waste your time in that which comes of its own accord, which doesn't give you the highest goal. So now, there's given you two choices. Distinguish. Use your good intelligence and distinguish right from wrong. And take that thing which has the great value and do it while you've got the best strength of your body and mind. So it's like saying to someone, in this hand I've definitely got nothing. In this hand I might have something. Which one are you going to take? Which one would you take? I've definitely got nothing in that one. Might have something in this one. Which one are you going to choose? I think so. there's nothing. Materially he's saying that, you're not going to get any happiness in the material world, birth, death, old age, and disease. There's nothing there. You may not have faith in the spiritual world, but it's your better option. So, Prabhupada mentions how, the Vedic system divides the social system into Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras, etc. He says, but... So they each have different activities that you perform as intellectuals or leaders or producers or workers. But everyone in society can do this together. Everyone can engage in devotional service. And Prabhupada says that if one wants to live without devotional service, his status as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra certainly has no meaning. Whether one is in a higher or lower division, one certainly falls down for want of Krishna consciousness. A sane man there is always fearful of falling from his position. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. The highest goal of life can be achieved as long as one's body is stout and strong. We should therefore live in such a way that we keep ourselves always healthy and strong in mind and intelligence, so that we can distinguish the goal of life from a life full of problems. A thoughtful man must act in this way, learning to distinguish right from wrong and thus attain the goal of life. So, you know, love my way of saying that you know, every person has to do this. They have to be able to use their keep their intelligence in such a good state that you can use it to distinguish that if I do this, I'll have a life full of problems. And if I do this, I'll attain a very wonderful destination in this life and the next. So does that sound like Hinduism to anyone? Anti-Christian? You know, it's meant for all human beings, isn't it? You know, women, men. All races, doesn't matter whether you're Christian, Hindu, that all should follow this instruction.
Even when we take up devotion service, it might take us a while to get this intelligence to avoid a life of problems.
It may, but you know. As Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that you know, one whose mind is fixed on Krishna soon becomes, you know, his intelligence soon becomes steady. You know? So Krishna, you know, he understands. It's not as if you immediately start trying to think and become Krishna conscious that, you know, it's possible, but because of bad habits and conditioning, he understands that, you know, soon, you know. In many places in the Gita, he says, you know, one who follows his path of liberation and bhakti, you know, they're sure to attain the supreme destination in the very near future. You know, so many things like that. So, you know, he's appreciating that it's not ordinary, that you know, it'll just happen straight away. But he's saying, but keep trying for it and you'll get success. If you keep endeavouring, and you endeavour in the right way, you will get success, he says. And he says that in the sixth chapter. You just keep endeavouring. Endeavour, but in the right way, and you will get it. The more we do things in the right way, the sooner we will get the result. The more we endeavour, and the more we endeavour in the right way, the sooner we'll get the result. Every human being has a maximum duration of life of 100 years, but for one who cannot control the senses, half of those years are completely lost because at night he sleeps 12 hours being covered by ignorance. Therefore, such a person has a life of only 50 years. So, if we sleep half our life away, if we live to 80, we've lost 40 years. So, you know, he's already told us make the best decision for the best life without the problems, you know, while you're in the best condition to get the best result as quick as possible. So one may think, oh, okay, you know, maybe when I'm older, you know. So now, you know, Prahlad Maharaj is going to show, no, you just do this straight away, because if you have a look, you don't have as much time as you think you have like that. And he says, in the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Mm-hmm. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, another 10. In this way, 20 years. Similarly, you know, you imagine that, right? So people, you know, steal something, you know, grand larceny, steal, you know, they do a diamond heist or something, 20 years jail. Oh, the lamenting, the family is crying, all the relatives, oh, you got 20 years. You know, we do 20 years like that without a tear. 20 years of a life, 20 years is gone. We should think, my child, you know, I was playing football 20 years, 10 years, gone! You know, but actually, you know, it's like a prison sentence. We don't. So then he says, you know, similarly in old age, when one is an invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. Just like that, another 20. It's like, you know, imagine someone comes up and cuts off your arm. Oh, hey, that's an arm. And a leg. You know, these are 20 years, 40 years. These are big things, aren't they? One whose mind and senses are uncontrolled becomes increasingly attached to family life because of insatiable lusty desires and very strong illusion. In such a madman's life, the remaining years are also wasted because even during those years, he cannot engage himself in devotional service. Whew. Again, Srila Prabhupada explaining the Vedic way of life, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, it helps one to not waste those years. You know, the cultivation of Vedic life is to get the best out of the years that we have through proper education from the very beginning, spiritually and socially. And why should we not waste those years? Because we should utilize the Krishna consciousness and get the best use of this life, this human form of life. What person too attached to household life due to being unable to control his senses can liberate himself? An attached householder is bound very strongly by ropes of affection for his family, wife, children, and other relatives. Badham, kama bandhanam. You know, when we do the marriage ceremony, you know, we chant it in the mantra, and they tie the knot. You know, we want that knot to be tied, because by one man and one woman being bound to each other in marriage, it regulates the senses. And anything that regulates the senses is helpful on the path of liberation. Unregulated senses are a stumbling block. So, but because of the previous training that the grihasthas have, and their training even as grihasthas, they know that ultimately, you know, it's not forever, you know. It's for, you know, the time of raising the children and in Krishna consciousness, helping them get set on the path back to Krishna consciousness. And then again, you know, the knot can be untied in the heart. And again, you know, more time for the spiritual pursuits. Our devotion life, our grihastha life is not a spiritual pursuit, not saying that, but you know, sometimes in household life, which is a spiritual activity dedicated to Krishna, but sometimes, you know, there can be, more distractions than we may have anticipated, you know. So then Vanaprastha is, you know, okay, then, you know, the service to Krishna being done of raising the children, you know, and it's a field of activity, you know, that does have other distractions which you have to really, you know, fight against in order to maintain a strong level of Krishna consciousness. But then, you know, then Vanaprastha means that, okay, let's just in one swoop remove a lot of the distractions and just make our efforts to always remember Krishna, you know, a little easier. So here, now, so Prabhupada summarizes some very important principles in this purport. He says, Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj's first proposal, Kamrama Acharet Pragyo Damam Bhagavat Iha. One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of life from the very beginning of life to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. Now, this devotional service, Dhamman Bhagavatam, means the religious principle of reviving our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Remember, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says to Arjuna, I am teaching you, you know, this ancient science of the relationship between the soul and the Supreme Soul. That is devotional service. And for this purpose, Krishna personally advises, Savadamam Parit Yagya Mamikam Saranam Brajam. Give up all other duties and surrender unto me. So anything that's not conducive to becoming a fully surrendered soul, fully reviving our relationship with the Supreme Person of Godhead, put that aside. Now, so he says, Prabhupada says, for this purpose, one must first be liberated from material bondage and especially from household life. Household life is actually a kind of license for a materially attached person by which to enjoy sense gratification under regular principles. Otherwise, there is no need for entering household life. So, you know, the Prabhupada just says straight out, you know, that, you know, if you don't need a license for a little sense gratification, then there's no need for household life. So, so before entering, which is, you know, it's interesting because in most religions, you hear, especially Christianity, or people who are not say they're religious but don't follow any particular church, they say, look, you know, the most religious thing you can do is look after your family. Everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. You know, so they have, you know, a complete, they're just like, you know, if you look after your family, you know, you don't go to church, you don't pray, you're a very religious person, and that is a perfection of religion. That is a very common concept of what a religious person is. Here, we say the opposite. You know, if you want a little license for sense gratification while you're doing, you know, your religious duties, you know, if you need that, get married. If you want to just do your religious, you know, revive your relationship with Krishna, and, you know, there's not even a speck of, you know, desire for material enjoyment in your heart, don't bother. You know, unless, like, you know, in the case of sometimes we have some of the acharyas, like you have, you know, different acharyas, Srinivasakur and Avatandasakur, sometimes, you know, they're completely liberated, but, you know, their followers wanted that you will be able to produce you know, children of such a high quality, you know, they wanted them to get married for the sake of, you know, producing children who would also, you know, preach. Like, so, you know, there are exceptional cases, but talking about people in general, you know, so, you know, there are, I mean, you know, in ISKCON, there's actually, you know, a need for, you know, Greek hustlers who, you know, are liberated persons who can literally, they may not necessarily be interested in, you know, material sense gratification at all, you know. But, you know, for the purpose of the Grihastha ashram is the preferred mode of ashram for the majority of devotees, you know, as stated by our acharyas. In Kali Yuga, it's recommended. Most devotees should marry. It's safer, it's better. But, you know, it's good to have very good examples of those who can follow, you know, in full surrender to Krishna, so that others can follow. Oh, that's what a fully surrendered Grihastha does, like that. So, you know, some devotees, it's good they can take up married life and raise children, and literally for the sake of guiding others, as some of the acharyas, you know, did themselves. So, so it's not that. You know, we see in the Panchatattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, you know, he married twice. Bhakti Vinod Thakur married twice, even though his father, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he sort of chastised him, you know, criticised him, you know, for marrying twice. You know, sort of like a little bit of a family joke amongst Nietzsche sitters. But, you know, Srinivasacharya married, Nityananda Prabhu, he had two wives. Devaita Acharya, Gadadha Pandit, that makes all five. Prabhupada was married. So,
in ISKCON, anybody marriages?
What's that?
In ISKCON, anybody married twice?
Can anyone marry twice? Well, at the same time?
Has anyone?
Got a couple of wives?
I
think I've heard of it. But let's not go there. It's not in the mood of this purport. So, you know, and then, of course, what happens, also, we must say that some devotees, you know, begin Krishna consciousness, you know, with some little material tinges still left in their heart, and then they become first class, fully surrendered devotees. But they, you know, may as well complete their mission as Grihasthas, you know, raising the children and, you know, what have you. But, you know, we can't say that, you know, there are not some Grihasthas who are. You know, it's not that everyone that's a Grihastha is still has some material inclination. You know, there are some Grihasthas who have long passed that stage of material inclination and are just completely, you know, liberated personalities, but, you know, still fulfilling the role that they began until, you know, further, it's arranged by the Lord that they change ashram. So, you know, be very careful with this, you know. So there's a general statement, but don't be very careful, you know, to, you know, there are, don't look at, you know, very advanced devotees who are in the Grihastha ashram and just lump them all together as, you know, materially tended. You know, they're all different levels, from, you know, big material inclinations to, you know, almost none and none, like that. So, you know, but as a general principle, you know, it is, you know, a license for sense gratification for those who need that while they're on the path, you know, of Krishna consciousness. And then we also see another important point is that sometimes we've seen that, you know, some of the grihasthas who may have had, you know, some material inclinations, but they're taking the slow and steady path like that. And others have raced ahead sometimes to sannyas and appeared to have rocketed ahead, and then they've sort of gone back, and then the grihastha, like the tortoise and the hare, has just bypassed the sannyas. He's sort of gone backwards. Hey, you're going the wrong way. So, you know, there's a lot of considerations here, but we should take what Prabhupada is saying. Otherwise, there is no need for entering household life. So, so Prabhupada discusses, this in context of the Vedic civilization. And ultimately, therefore, one should give up household life. And definitely in household life, be careful of not going further down into material existence. That is possible. And actually, unfortunately, you'd have to say more so than the sannyasis, who perhaps, gone a little bit backwards from sannyas, the hundreds and hundreds of grihasthas. You know, that would be in the majority who have entered grihastha life and actually gone, with a little tinge and then just indulged and just literally become almost, non-active on the spiritual path and just, almost grihamadis. So be careful of that. You know, there's a danger there. So, if one remains in the dark well of household life because of uncontrolled senses, he becomes increasingly entangled by the ropes of affection for his wife, children, servants, house, money, and so on. If you have money. Such a person cannot attain liberation from material bondage. Therefore, one should be taught from the very beginning of life to be first-class brahmacharis. Then it will be possible for them to give up household life in the future. That is the Vedic system. To return back home to Godhead, one must be completely free from material attachment. Therefore, bhakti yoga means vairagya vidya, the art that can help one develop a distaste for material enjoyment. If one engages in devotional service from the very beginning of life, he easily attains vairagya vidya, or ashakti, detachment. So we have, shraddha, sarasanga, bhajana kriya, nishta, ruchi, ashakti. One imperfectly engages in the devotional service is therefore called Goswami, or Swami, master of the senses. Unless one is master of the senses, you should not accept the renounced order of life, sannyas. A strong inclination for sense enjoyment is the cause of the material body. Without full knowledge, one cannot be unattached to material enjoyment, but as long as one is not in that position, one is not fit to return home back to Godhead. So here again, same point, that many followers of religion equate being religious, or very godly, very spiritual, the fact that they are prepared to do the right thing by their family. Even though most of them don't. But they're going to try. Or at least they think they should have tried. So then they're very religious and spiritual. I should have done better. And we're saying, something different, that, basically that attachment to family, without attachment to the personality of Godhead or devotional service to the Lord, is basically You know, you'll never attain spiritual liberation by that. It's actually, it means you're completely bound in the material world and illusion. So they're saying one thing, Prahlad Maharaj saying the exact opposite. So you imagine how popular Srimad Bhagavatam is among some circles. Money is so dear that one conceives that money is being sweeter than honey. Therefore, who can give up the desire to accumulate money, especially in household life? Thieves, professional servants, soldiers, and merchants try to acquire money even by risking their very dear lives. So as you see, as you look at these verses, when we sit down to give Krishna consciousness to someone, we have to be aware that we're about to say something which completely goes against everything that the persons we're speaking to believe in. They believe very firmly in the exact opposite. So, because we are, many devotees are quite often preaching Krishna consciousness, they might, you know, give them back to the Srimad Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita. You know, the people who come to the temple or may come to a home program, what have you. Almost preaching to the converted. So, but, you know, if you're at work, you know, you're preaching to new people, not in the context of a temple sometimes, you have to appreciate that everything you say goes completely against everything they believe. They believe, you know, the exact contrary. And so here now Prahlad is saying how, you know, money is almost dearer than life. They're willing to risk their lives. He gives so many examples. You know, like these deep sea collecting pearls. You ever seen that? Documentaries? And they collect pearls. They have to, you know, there's only certain people that can do it. I mean, they have to hold their breath for, you know, it's like 8 or 9 minutes or something like that. There's only a certain amount of people. They've got to, you know, they just got to dive down and, you know, and, you know, pick them up from the depths and, you know, bring them back up. And they have so many deaths and, you know, they only do it for so many years before they die and, you know. There are many, many different very risky jobs.
And they use diving equipment?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of third world countries don't have diving equipment. The pearls are there, you know, you've got a wooden canoe and if you can get the pearl, you're going to feed your family for a year. You know. But no, they don't have anything. You know, mercenaries. So, he says, how can a person who is most affectionate to his family, the core of his heart being always filled with their pictures, give up their association? Specifically, a wife is very kind and sympathetic and always pleases her husband in a solitary place. Who could give up the association of such a dear and affectionate wife? Small children talk in broken language, very pleasing to hear. And their affectionate father always thinks of their sweet words. How could he give up their association? One's elderly parents and one's sons and daughters are also very dear. A daughter is especially dear to her father, and while living at her husband's house, she is always in his mind. Who could give up that association? Aside from this, in household affairs there are many decorated items of household furniture, and there are also animals and servants. Who could give up such comforts? The attached householder is like a silkworm which weaves a cocoon in which he becomes imprisoned, unable to get out simply for the satisfaction of two important senses, the genitals and the tongue. One is bound by material conditions. How can one escape? So, talking about this, you know, household life, he is explaining that, to take up devotional service and put aside household life is a very difficult thing. You know, for money, for their household life, they're prepared to risk their life so many ways. And then there's all this, beautiful and pleasing attraction, how can they give that up? Especially for these prominent senses, the tongue and the genitals, always demanding. So, it's impossible. Impossible to give up this household life and take to devotional service. So they're thinking, Prahlad is saying, don't think you're going to take it up later. Once you get into the household life, you're done. So it says, for such a man to get out is extremely difficult unless he is helped by a strong person, the spiritual master, who helps the fallen person with a strong rope of spiritual instructions. A fallen person should take advantage of this rope, and then the spiritual master or the supreme person of Godhead, Krishna, will take him out of the dark well. And I guess that's where the example comes, right? The man in the well, and he throws down the well. I can't get out. I'm throwing the rope down. Yes, but I can't get out. No, you have to hold it, grab a hold of the rope. Let go of the well, So you have to grab it and... One who is too attached cannot understand that he is wasting his valuable life for the maintenance of his family. So they don't even notice life going. So we lost 20, another 20 in old age, and this 20 disappeared, we didn't even know. He also fails to understand that the purpose of human life, a life suitable for realization of the absolute truth, is being imperceptibly spoiled. However, he is very cleverly attentive to seeing that not a single farthing is lost in mismanagement. You know what a farthing is? Farthing. So farthing is like it's like a penny sort of thing, half a penny maybe. Thus, although an attached person in material existence always suffers from threefold miseries, he does not develop a distaste for the way of material existence. So this is very interesting, isn't it? The most valuable thing is being lost by his mismanagement, doesn't even notice it, oblivious. But he's expert in calculating the loss of pounds, shillings and pence. And he gives this, Chanika Pandit gives the example that a moment of life cannot be purchased in exchange for millions of dollars. A foolish person, however, wastes such a valuable life without knowing how much he is losing, even according to money calculations. Very, very bewildering. If a person too attached to the duties of family maintenance is unable to control his senses, the core of his heart is immersed in how to accumulate money. Although he knows that one who takes the wealth of others will be punished by the law of the government and by the laws of Yamaraj after death, he continues cheating others to acquire money. The senses are just out of control. Oh, my friends, sons of demons in this material world, even those who are apparently advanced in education have the propensity to consider, this is mine and that is for others. Thus, they're always engaged in providing the necessities of life to their families in a limited conception of family life, just like uneducated cats and dogs. They're unable to take the spiritual knowledge. Instead, they are bewildered and overcome by ignorance. And that's that verse from Bhagavad Gita that we read, 5:15. Because he's saying, don't blame me. Don't say I'm doing everything. Everything is done by God. It's all destiny. Nor does the Supreme Spirit assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. They're living in illusion. They're hanging on to that illusion. They're attached to that illusory way of life. And their mind and senses are uncontrolled. They're enjoying, they're wallowing in that the sense gratification of illusion. Oh, it may be foolishness, but I'm enjoying, you know, my senses. And oh, well, then don't go blaming God that it's all destiny that you can't do anything about then. You know. So, we must come to this point of knowledge as Sanatana Goswami did. Kami. Who am I? Why am I suffering the threefold miseries of material existence? This is education. Don't follow the same animal propensities as cats and dogs. If you do, then what is the use of your education, Prabhupada says? Oh, yes, I'm very, very well educated. Oh, what do you do? I live like a dog, you know, with my uncontrolled senses. Oh, very good. I have a BA, a bachelor, you know, you ask them. They've all got their different certificates, but they all do the same thing. They play cats and dogs. So it wouldn't matter. They might as well switch the certificates around. You wouldn't know who was educated and what, would you? And of course, you know, as Prabhupada points out, the scientists and the leaders, you know, they're all it's the same thing. Protect the interests of their own nation and society. It's extended family interests like that. Cats and dogs. So, in other words, materialistic education does not change one's position. It can even make it worse. Therefore, take to spiritual education, as Prahlad's saying. It is certain that no one bereft of knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been able to liberate himself from material bondage at any time or in any country. Rather, those bereft of knowledge of the Lord are bound by the material laws. That's a strong statement, isn't it? You know, you won't find anyone bereft of the knowledge of the personality of Godhead who can actually liberate themselves. They're factually addicted to sense gratification and their target is women. Indeed, they're actually playthings in the hands of attractive women. So they think they're the enjoyers of women, but because of their uncontrolled senses, they're literally the playthings of their senses, you know. Victimized, and the objects of the senses, victimized by such a conception of life, they become surrounded by children, grandchildren, etc., and are shackled to material bondage. Those who are very much addicted to this conception of life are called demons, you know, if they're really strongly addicted to it. Demons. Therefore, although you are sons of demons, keep aloof from such persons and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, the origin of all the demigods. Because the ultimate goal for the devotees of Narayan is liberation from the bondage of material existence. Sopalava Maharaj is saying, you know, give up this dark well of family life, attachment to family life. Give up, you know, this attachment to sense gratification in family life. We're not saying give up family life, we're saying give up attachment to sense gratification in family life. We say, you know, take the family life if it's required, and learn the process of detachment by devotional service. So he's saying, in history of human society, no one at any time or any place has been liberated because of too much affection for and attachment for his family. Even if they're well educated. So the families, the parents are shackled, and they want their children to be shackled in the same way. Playing the parts of playboys in the hands of women, I use the word playboy, they glide down to the darkest regions of material existence. Because they're unable to control their senses, they continue life of chewing the chewed and therefore descend to the darkest material regions. One should give up the association of such demons and adhere to the association of devotees. Thus one will be able to be liberated from material bondage. So now Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out that, you know, you are following this way, and that is the way of demons. So then you will become like that. But no one has ever become liberated by becoming like that. So now he's, you know, the conception is being introduced to gradually you must take the association of the devotees and they will help you to take shelter of the personality of Godhead. And the ultimate goal of such devotees is liberation from material bondage. Any questions on that? My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan is the original Super Soul, the Father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing Him or worshipping Him under any conditions. Whether one be a child or an old man, the relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. So Prahlad is presenting that, you know, if one asks that you know, if we give up family life, which, you know, there's a lot of endeavour and trouble, and then we attach ourselves to the service of the Lord, then we're going to get a lot of endeavour and trouble as well. So, you know, what's the benefit? What's the gain? But it's not valid to think like that. Because, one, first it should be understood that, you know, the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, Narayan, Krishna is the supreme seed-giving father of all living entities. We're all parts and parcels of the Lord. We're all a part of the Lord's spiritual energy. So he's our father. So it's natural. It's a fact, and it's an eternal fact. As opposed to, you know, our relationship with things in this world is temporary. It's not a fact. Apart from the reality of it, you know, because it's a fact, then, and it's an eternal fact, then there's no difficulty in establishing a relationship with the Lord, because it's eternally there already. It's already there. We've just forgotten it. So what's the difficulty? You don't, you know, it's already there. You have to open your eyes. Oh, it's already there. And it's natural and it's intimate. It's loving. So what's the difficulty there? If it's something that's natural and it's very loving. Apart from that, as Krishna says in the Gita, if one performs even a very slight devotional service, Narayana is always ready to save one from the greatest danger. As with the example of Arjuna. So, therefore, Prabhupada says, pleasing Narayana does not require as much endeavour as pleasing one's family, community or nature, a nation. He says, you know, political leaders, they're killed for a slight discrepancy in their behaviour. Or they lose their jobs. He says that, furthermore, so, you know, one's duty is to revive one's relationship with Narayana. And a slight endeavour in this direction will make the attempt successful, whereas one will never be successful in pleasing his so-called family, society and nation, even if one endeavours to sacrifice his life. So... and the simple endeavour involved in the devotional service of Shravanam, Kirtan and Vishnu, hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord, can make one successful in pleasing the personality of Godhead. That really defeats that argument, doesn't it? Someone says, you know, there's a lot everyone knows, you know, to please the family, you know, get a house, and get the job, you know, keep the status quo, car, you know, there's pets, furnishings, you know, all the latest gadgets and, you know, the education. It's a lot of work, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to please Narayana, so that's, you know, 30, 40 year endeavour, day in, day out, right? Big endeavour. And give up, you know, the prime of your life for that one. Or you sit down for a couple of minutes and chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And in those couple of minutes, you know, Lord Narayana becomes fully pleased. So, and for that, you know, someone is, you know, like Arjuna, he chanted a little bit in the beginning of his life, then at the very end of his life he chanted Narayana, and that was enough to please Lord Narayana, you know, even it wasn't chanted in pure devotional service, but that was enough to please Lord Narayana, and he saved him from the greatest. But how much endeavour he went through to please, you know, his family, and yet at the end of his life chanted that, you know, Narayana, meaning for his son, and the Lord's so kind he took it, oh, you said my name. So one cannot compare. And you know, it's such a you can see that sometimes in temple life, the devotees seem to have forgotten this verse, that how easily the Lord becomes pleased. You know, this is actually a principle of devotional service. You know, Kevala Anandakandi, you know, that... these lords, Lord Nityananda, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their process is simply joyful. And you know, there's we like to inspire each other to do more and to push each other to advance and what have you. But sometimes, and of course, there are the demands of things that need to be done. You know, kitchen needs to be clean. You know, it can't be done tomorrow. Someone's got to do it today. So there are demands of things that has to be done. And sometimes there's a manpower shortage and what have you. But you can see that sometimes devotees forget this principle, that how easy the Lord is pleased. It's that a devotee doesn't have to do much at all. And sometimes another aspect of this is that a devotee who does understand this, who has full faith in Prahlad Maharaj's instructions, as we said, Darshan, one who's fixed in the consciousness, I'm the servant of Krishna, they never deviate that for a second, that person gets the benefit of all the 9 processes of devotional service, even though they're just sitting there, but they never forget for a second. You know, they see everything meant for the enjoyment of Krishna, not for themselves. I'm the servant of Krishna. Everything, you know, oh, this is pleasing to Krishna. This would be nice for Krishna. You know, that is, they may not necessarily be doing something. They may not necessarily have any position. They may not necessarily be the biggest book distributor, but they can be pleasing the Lord. Very, very extensively. The Lord can be completely satisfied with that person. Imagine Srila Prabhupada, you know, sitting amongst his god brothers, an unknown entity. Krishna's like so pleased with Prabhupada. From their point of view, he's never done anything. I don't even know him from a bar of soap. You know, who's that? I saw him, you know. Krishna is completely satisfied with him. Prabhupada understands this principle. And therefore, sometimes our dealings with devotees can be inappropriate. That Krishna can be very pleased with a devotee. Can be a little child. Can be one of the ladies, you know, making garlands. One of the ladies not making garlands. One of the ladies watching someone make garlands. You know, someone doing something very inconsequential, and Krishna can be very pleased with them, because that is the nature of this, you know, of Krishna. Sometimes in a temple we may get a concept, if they're not doing this and that, then they're not up to the grade. So therefore, I'm not pleased with them. You know. I'm not pleased with you. I'm waiting for you to do something significant. There's things I want you to do and you're not doing it. So I'm not pleased with you. And I was speaking about that in Srimad Bhagavatam the other day. You know, we always have to remember that we're supposed to represent Krishna, and we're supposed to represent that when Krishna's pleased with someone, we're supposed to be also, you know, pleased with that person. We can't be oblivious to Krishna and actually treat people in a way that's completely contrary to how Krishna is pleased with that person. it's a very, very significant point that is quite often lost. And one of my favourite parts of the Nectar Devotion, again, is just those verses in the Nectar Devotion where it describes that, you know, someone takes a garland, you know, they accept the garland, and Krishna becomes so pleased that, you know, they've accepted it. This person is reciprocating love with me. They've, you know, taken that maha, you know, and Krishna may be more satisfied with that person who's just smelling the incense and taking a little charanamrita than someone who's pretentiously trying to get everyone's attention for their, you know, own aggrandizement, doing this, that, and the other like that. And Krishna's thinking, that's not for me. You know, you're doing so much as that for your, you know, pride and arrogance. You know, that's not for me. So, it's a very, here, you know, we see Prahlad presenting the glories of Krishna consciousness, you know, the personality of Godhead. Imagine hearing that for the first time. You know? And, you know, strange enough, you may get devotees who can be part of Krishna consciousness for 20 years. You may not necessarily get to this point. And all of a sudden, why didn't someone tell me that in the beginning? Because there's been a lot of things going wrong because no one told me this, you know. I'm doing things, you know, that I didn't need to do, and people are treating me in ways they shouldn't have been treating me, and it's because that no one told me this.
That raises a question. In the 25 years or whatever of Melbourne Temple, how many times we have gone around all the 12 temples?
All the temples in Australia?
In the temple, Shiva Bhagavatam class?
I think we've done it twice. We're going through for the second time, isn't it?
Or is it the
third time.
I think I don't think the first time, or that one or two times we can go to the 10th canto.
Yeah, that's right.
Only one time we have gone to
the 10th. One time the 10th canto, yeah.
And
the
second time.
And recording only the last few cantos.
It has been there for. Recording
has been many years. So saying, imagine hearing this for the first time after many years in devotional service, but imagine hearing it from the very beginning and meditating on it deeper and deeper for 30, 40 years, 50 years. You know, ecstatic. That relationship, so natural, so easy. It's already there. I had this nice dream one time. Couple of years ago, my life becomes, as a devotee, became very, very intense, and there's a lot of hostile factors, and you know, I was trying to think what I needed to do, you know, to be nicely established in Krishna consciousness, and. Prabhupada appeared to me in a dream. He said, Gangiswara, what you're looking for is right in your lap. And then, you know, I woke up. And I thought about it. I thought, you know, actually, you know, I don't need to do anything. He said, be Krishna. I just have to think of Krishna, which, you know, I usually do on a daily basis. And chant Hare Krishna and, you know, do a little preaching, eat some prasadam, and, you know, go back to Godhead and get a nice spiritual master, and, you know, grand disciple of Prabhupada, beautiful deities, nice association, you know, nice temple. I thought to myself, it's like, you know, it's already there. You know, practically, you know, it's just, you know, take advantage, you know. It's already there, sitting in my lap, you know, like that. What's that? That was... you know, I sort of, when I, 2012, I got attacked, and then, you know, there was some difficulties, some difficulties with devotees who supported the person who attacked me, and it was almost like my family was being driven away, you know, so, you know, I was just trying to think that, you know, I somehow need to fix myself up more in Krishna consciousness, you know, this, how do I get this relationship with Krishna tighter, you know, my relationship, my spiritual master, so that there's no gap for these disturbances like that, but the Prabhupada, you know, I was thinking, even in my dream, I was thinking like that, you know, and Prabhupada just appeared and said, Gangiswara, what you're looking for, it's already right there in your lap. It was somewhere around about that time also that I had a nice dream with Srila Prabhupada, and as I usually do, I'll either come to the temple or I'll make arrangements for some of the home programs. So on this day, I drove to the temple to pick up a few things to go out and do some home programs. But when I got to the temple, Prabhupada says, he came, he said, I'll come with you. So he jumped in the car and he sat in the passenger seat. And so we went out and we went to a home program, and we did a little fire ceremony, we did a little kirtan, sometimes Prabhupada chanted, sometimes I chanted, sometimes he did the Gita, sometimes he let me finish the class. We had some bishad, we had a little conversation with the people, and then we went to the next house and we did it all again. And we just did that all day, morning to night, all over Melbourne, that. At the end of the day, I dropped Prabhupada off at the temple, and because he was going to stay here, and I was going home. I said, Prabhupada, would you like me to do a little astrology reading for you? He said, no, that's not necessary. He said, but if you just do what we did today, you go door to door, family to family, and preach Krishna consciousness, your life will be perfect. And so that was about the same time. So, but it's verses like this, strangely enough, sometimes when devotees have difficulties, what they try and do is establish a very elevated platform of being strongly connected with Krishna somehow, looking for their gopi form or, some rasa or some confirmation of advancement. And what is usually, in my case, I've always found that the fundamental principles of Bhagavad Gita, Niha Vikrana Nashasti Pratyabhyo Navidyate Svapamapyasya Dhamma Sahatrayate Mahotu, that in this endeavour there is no loss of diminution. A little advancement will take you from the ground. And you come back to these principles that, Krishna is just going to give you the maximum benefit for the slightest little devotional service done for Krishna's happiness, not for yourself. You're actually doing it for Krishna. I don't want anything for you like that. And then if you think, that, and for that, and yet, for so many years, there may be even, so much more, pleasure for Krishna, that, so much sankirtan and so many things. So, you realise that we're very, protected, and, devotional platform of life is a very, it's a very stable, protected platform, actually. And it's very, very easy. It's very easy, it's very natural, and, but as in that verse, the lotus feet, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, they've given this process which is simply very easy and just simply enjoyment, but you have to give up sense gratification. So that's where Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, very difficult for the duplicitous. So if we want to enjoy sense gratification and be nicely situated as a devotee, that's when we've got a problem. And that's what Prahlad is saying as well. Same thing. But if we just put aside the sense gratification and say, I'm happy to chant, have some prasad, associate devotees, read the Srimad Bhagavatam, see the deities, let's just put this sense gratification. Devotion is very stable, very simple, very easy, like that, very protected, like that. Guaranteed. So, but one has to do it always. One has to just always, stay on that simplicity. Be a simple devotee, humble devotee, living a simple servant of the spiritual master, and one's position is very good. So, 5:2. Okay. I'm just going to whip through these last couple of verses because quickly. And we'll finish this chapter very quickly. So he says, we read that one. It was a fact. Yeah. Then text 20, 23, the Supreme Person of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, who is infallible and indefatigable, is present in different forms of life, from the inert living beings, stavara, such as plants, to Brahma, the foremost creator living being. He is also present in the varieties of material creations and the material elements, the total material energy and the modes of material nature, as well as the unmanifested material nature and the false ego. Although he is one, he is present everywhere. And he is also the transcendental supersoul, the cause of all causes, who is present as the observer in the cause of the hearts of all living entities. He is indicated as that which is pervaded and as that which is and as the all-pervading supersoul, but actually he cannot be indicated. He is changeless and undivided. He is simply perceived as the supreme Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss. Being covered by the curtain of the external energy, to the atheist, he appears non-existence. So here, to sum up this purport very simply, we can take some of these this purport from Bhagavad Gita 5:17. All right? It says that when one's knowledge, one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. This verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion of what complete knowledge is, and it's summarized nicely by Prabhupada in this purport. Prabhupada says in this 5:17, the supreme transcendental truth is Lord Krishna. The whole Bhagavad Gita centers around the declaration of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the version of all Vedic literature. Paratattva means the supreme reality who is understood by the knowers of the supreme as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the last word in the absolute truth. There is nothing more than that. So there in that verse is basically saying that Krishna is everything, but at the same time, everything is resting on his energies, and he is also, he expands himself in different forms as a super soul, Lord Narayan. But all of this is resting upon Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. So he's an individual person, and at the same time, everything is one with him. But the last word in spiritual understanding is that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. That's what it's saying there. That's what Prahlad is saying. 24. Therefore, my dear young friends, born of demons, please act in such a way that the Supreme Lord, who is beyond the conception of material knowledge, will be satisfied. Give up your demoniac nature and act without enmity or duality. Show mercy to all living entities by enlightening them in devotional service, thus becoming their well-wishers. And by serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which Krishna says the best way to serve me is to help people to see me present everywhere and surrender unto me. And by doing that, you will become more Krishna conscious by my grace, and they will. So then he goes on to say, nothing is unobtainable for the devotees who have satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes, the original source of everything. The Lord is a reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities. For devotees, therefore, who are transcendental to the modes of material nature, what is the use of following the principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification and liberation, which are all automatically obtainable under the influence of the modes of nature? We devotees always glorify the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore we do not ask for anything in terms of dharma, karma, artha and moksha. So by serving the personality of Godhead, the devotees, they're not interested in those things, you know, which are attainable in the material world, or even up to liberation. By befriending Krishna, who is the cause of everything, then why would they want anything? So then he goes on to say, religion, economic development and sense gratification, these are described in the Vedas as trivarga, or three ways to salvation. Within these three categories are education and self-realization, ritualistic ceremonies performed according to Vedic injunction, logic, the science of law and order, and the various means to earn one's livelihood. These are the external subjects of study in the Vedas, and therefore I consider them material. However, I consider surrender to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu to be transcendental. So he's encouraging them. Give up your material education, even of the Vedas. Just take surrender to the personality of Godhead, that part of the Vedas. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the well-wisher and friend of all living entities, formally explained this transcendental knowledge to the great Saint Narada. Such knowledge is extremely difficult to understand without the mercy of a saintly person like Narada. But everyone who has taken shelter of Narada's disciplic succession can understand this confidential knowledge. I received this knowledge from the great Saint Narada Muni, who is always engaged in devotional service. This knowledge, which is called Bhagavad Dham, is fully scientific. It is based on logic and philosophy and is free from all material contamination. The sons of the demons replied, "Dear Prahlad, neither you nor we know any teacher or spiritual master other than Sundra and Amaka, the sons of Sukracharya. After all, we are children and they are our controllers. For you especially, who always remain within the palace, it is very difficult to associate with a great personality. Dear friend, most gentle one, would you kindly explain how it was possible for you to hear Narada? Kindly dispel our doubts in this regard." And next week we will hear what Prahlad learned in the womb from Narada Muni. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh,
when
you
were reading that verse about Krishna is everything, that sort of thing, you see everywhere about this one person, I just was remembering maybe like a religious education class in school, primary school.
Yeah.
And I can remember just this impression of completely rejecting the whole God thing.
Right.
Because no one could explain to me, I couldn't understand how he's everywhere.
And at the same time he's a person.
And I'm like, is this just nonsense?
Yeah.
I just reject that.
Yeah.
So it's there in the verses like that.
Yeah. Explaining. Mm. Yeah. You know, they have trouble explaining it and understanding. Actually, a lot of Christians, although they teach it, they don't have faith that God actually has a personal force.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They teach it. You know they teach it because it's part of the teaching, but they sort of, you know, don't take literally sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
The teachers themselves don't have faith.
Yeah, so they focus more on Jesus.
Yeah.
He's a person.
Yeah.
So
that's right. That's something they can understand.
Yeah.